Welcome to Making Your Miles Count Production, an educational program to all Canadian lease owner-operators with your host, Robert Scaper.
Did you know the other day, it was about 2 weeks ago, I don't know the right word for this, but we were hacked. First of all, there was absolutely no information that the hacker got, okay? It didn't destroy any information or anything like that. It didn't have access to that. But in our app, if you sign up for our app, you download it and you sign in. And by signing in, you have to give an email address and use your password. And in that process, it will ask you for an email address, and then it will ask you to create a password for that. There was a bot. Like a bot is just a robot, like a computer generated machine. And it, the way our programming worked was it created an account, and then while it was waiting for the password, it had to, it linked to our server to so that it had access to the visual stuff. Like by visual, actually all it has access to is their YouTube channel. Okay. And in that process, that's where the bot got in, and it's whatever, a nanosecond of opportunity from one, and it got into there, and then it started generating accounts. So it would just open another account and another, and another, another. And then once it got rolling in there, I guess it multiplied how many it was doing. By the time we caught it, it was doing about 3,000 accounts an hour.
Whoa.
By the time we shut it down and got it out, it was doing it about, it's hard to tell, but approximately 10,000 accounts in an hour.
With an email and a password?
Yeah. And it's, but it's, it was all the same, to my understanding, it was all the same email. I can't confirm that. I just asked the guys. And all it was doing is we have a certain number of accounts, right? Mm-hmm. Every client has an account number. Well, it was like 40, when we first saw it, it was 35,000 more than we ordinarily have, okay? By the time we shut everything down, they were up at 75,000, you know?
Oh, my word.
And that was just a few hours.
Yeah.
Right? And they fixed that quote-unquote hole.
Yeah.
You know, and first of all, we say, well, what is so what if they open up a bunch of accounts? What exactly are they doing here?
Right.
So we started looking into there, and wherever there was a place in a certain portion of our database, it would put an email, or not an email, it put a website address.
Mm-hmm.
And so we looked into that address, and it was an advertisement, basically just an advertisement for a gambling website.
Shoot. Oh, my.
Yeah. And that's all it was, is just advertising for gambling. There was no malicious stuff, nothing at all. And so it was harmless. But then we're thinking, well, why in the world would somebody just do a bunch of advertising?
Yeah.
And it is, in the end, it comes down to just numbers. If they find a place like this and they just plow wherever they can, because it costs them almost nothing to build these things, if they do this to 1,000 people and you get one out of 1,000 saying, hey, that's a looks like a good gambling website, I've never been to there before, and they get one customer from it, that's all they need, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the type of environment that's out there. And the hole that our software had, I don't know, I'm not going to say how we plugged it, it was a very common type of a hole, you know, and it was aggravating, not aggravating, it was annoying. It was just, that's all it was annoying. And it took up probably about 4 or 5 hours for us to fix, one person 4 or 5 hours. And, but then our, I mean, that I kind of enjoyed the process because I like our system to be tested to make sure that there is no bugs.
Yeah.
You know, if this is all they could find, well, that's a pretty good.
That's terrific. You know,
they had no access to anybody's account. They had no access to anything on there, you know, and now they did explain how they fixed it. And I thought, man, that's pretty good. You know, and and there's is a time and it has to, I don't want to use the terminology for it, but I realized okay how they fixed it. Okay, it's not gonna occur again. You know, those are the kind of the environment that we're in right now, and within the next 5 to 10 years.
Oh my!
In my opinion, anything electronic. Yeah. I mean, your Fitbit. If you have a Fitbit. You can't guarantee that your Fitbit is even going to be accurate. There's going to be, everything is going to end up being a security issue in one way or another. Because people will get your Fitbit and your Fitbit is going to link, and it's going to link to your phone. Now they got your phone. And everything is going to be either secure or insecure. You know, it's pretty amazing stuff. We have some stuff that's coming in for security probably in 3 to 6 maybe a year, but 3 to 6 months hopefully. And right now we are just as secure as any bank in Canada, and if we get the next layer on, we'll be more secure than a bank, you know. But and at least in my opinion anyway, and realistically, the most vulnerable place that people release their information onto the web is through emails. You have to make the assumption that every email that you send is read by computer AI.
Everyone.
Yeah, especially Gmail.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Anything with Gmail. I know what they say or something like that, but at the very, very least, and I know this may be controversial, but it is read by Google itself. Like, they know. If you send an email, like, I even did this probably about when I bought my Kubota, it was 5 or 6 years ago. I looked, I only walked to, not walked, I drove to the Kubota dealer, talked, made a deal, okay? And then I sent one email to the guy, had his email address. I sent one email to him. To the guy, and in the email address, it doesn't say Kubota, okay? But in my email, the Kubota so-and-so, okay? And then my name, and sent it off. Within 3 hours, my Facebook, for the very first time, started showing advertisements about Kubota.
Kubota this, Kubota that.
But even if you're in conversation like this and you have your phone with you, it does the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're on airplane mode.
Yeah.
But yeah. But it's absolutely like they listen in, and people aren't listening in.
Yeah.
No. The computer is listening.
Well, friends of ours have Alexa. And one day we're sitting in their they have a Three Season in the back, and she says, it's kind of getting cool in here. And then Alexa says from the corner, well, go get a jacket. What?
Yeah. you shouldn't say it's scary.
Oh, well, what? That's the last time that thing would be in my house.
Yeah.
Like, there is privacy issues.
They're like, listening to everything you say. Yeah.
Oh, this, okay, this goes a little bit to this area. For Christmas, Melinda and I decided we'd start going to the gym and working out and just whatever.
Just for Christmas Day.
Just Christmas Day, and then we were done.
Well, at least it wasn't a New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
Just a Boxing Day.
Because those ones are, you can't break, right?
Yeah.
But no, so we looked around town and everything's so terribly expensive. And we found that if you go to the Y in Winnipeg, it's cheap. You have access to.
You got to drive to the Y.
It's an hour drive there and back, but it's still even with the gas.
Oh, really?
We figure it's
well, you got a diesel.
Yeah, It's about the same cost, and the drive there, it's not so bad. It's an hour. It's a relaxed drive there and back. And
every day?
No, or whenever you go. Between 2 and 3 times a week.
Wow. That's a lot.
So anyways, we did that. We were signed up there, and they got a cool thing. It's an electronic workout station, so you just plug in, and it shows at the end, you go on your app, and it shows you how much you worked out and all. It keeps track of all of this, right?
My muscles tell me the same thing.
Yeah.
Mine in about 36 hours tells you exactly what you did.
Yeah. Well, anyways, on the way home today, Melinda got a text or an email. I'm not sure which one it was, but it's and she was a little hot about this because she said, "You congratulations, you are now on par with the European health standard workout routine. You now qualify in what?" Mm-hmm. And Melinda says, "We didn't do nothing like that." So that means the why is somehow connected with that, the whole deal. And I'm going, "Oh, we just wanted to work out, the two of us, like whatever." Now we're a statistic with EU.
But the reason why I was
WHO, that's
World Health Organization.
WHO, not EU.
Yeah, you know what? One of the reasons why our firm is we want to move completely away from email, so that between us and our client, everything is all encrypted, and there is nothing that nobody can get into.
Right,
it's all private.
Yeah.
That's you can't do that kind of leaps overnight.
No.
And so it's a fair bit because a lot of people are still think in their mind that emails are safe, but they are actually the most. You have to make the assumption that everything you send by email is all read, and it's all available for AI out there.
Technically, Post Canada in an envelope is more secure.
Canada Post, absolutely.
Email is like opening it up, and then you send it through the mail. So everybody who
reads it at our company is through email.
Yeah.
Like our load offers everything.
Sure. Yeah.
It should not be like that.
How else would you do it?
Have an encrypted app. There are carriers that have their own app and all of the communication is directly between them. Now, it's not at the place right now that people will thievery that information very much. Other than, hey, here's some more Kubota parts if you want, you know, and advertisements, stuff like this. But there will be espionage. Absolutely there will. If there isn't already, there will be espionage between different carriers grabbing emails in transit, because you can easily copy those things, apparently. I don't know how. Obviously you can. And then say, oh, this is where that customer is. Oh, that's a customer, and all sorts of things.
So companies will hack into each other.
Oh, they have already. I can't see them not at this point because it's been so easy for decades already. Well, not decades, but a number of years anyway, for sure. And the in the end, it's going to if you work for somebody. Or if you have a deep relationship, you want encrypted end to end, and that by far is the most safest of it all. But I mean, it's hard for an entire generation of people who just sent emails and never heard of anything being hacked or anything like that, or stuff. Will absolutely they have to change their mindset about emails. And say, listen, we gotta. If we're sending sensitive information here or there, you know,
What about if they do it via the satellite, like with Penner? No.
The satellite.
They send everything over the satellite.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I'm making the assumption that's encrypted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But most don't do that anymore. There's less and less people actually using those satellite dishes. I may be wrong on that. I'm just guessing.
I know they changed last year. They changed their whole system to Isaac, which is quite a bit different than Qualcomm. Mm. They still send their stuff over to the mm-hmm. truck. Mm. But, yeah, I don't know. Like our company, we
it's all by phone.
Yeah, it's all done by phone. They can't even send messages over a satellite.
Do they have a satellite?
No.
No, they don't.
Like we have E-Log, which runs off your truck, but...
ultimately, I can't see... I don't know that much about this, but I can't see the long-term future of satellites in trucks. Maybe satellites on trailers to keep track of where the heck they are,
mm-hmm.
but not trucks to communicate and stuff like this. It's all going to be done by app. App is just way more secure. On your phone. It's going to be way more. So you're going to actually be talking to a driver and not a truck. Now, mm-hmm. if it's a company truck, they may have a satellite on there, just like a tracker, you know, to figure out where the heck the guy parked it, you know. But other than that, the actual communication stuff, it's going to be systems of encrypted back and forth. I don't know. I'm not that versed on you know, global security on the network, but at that level, when it comes to emails and stuff, there are some things that it's advanced so much that, like, we went email system in 2019 for our firm. At that time, it was the most popular system out there. Mm-hmm. We knew that it certainly wasn't that safe, but we weren't transporting heavily sensitive stuff. So it's right. a bank statement. Well, big statement. So the account is there. You don't know anybody's password or username or anything like that. It's just raw data that doesn't mean much of anything. And it's not going to be significant impact.
Is it easy for a company to set up their own app?
Well, we did.
That was quite a process, though.
You still got to pretty much build each one.
Yeah.
Hey, there's another business opportunity,
building companies. I'd let somebody else do that. I'll do it mm-hmm. for the accounting industry.
Yeah,
you know, and for us. one thing I learned many, many years ago. This was about 8 years ago. I had a guy build what was called Vital Travel App. Okay, it was an app where you could track your miles, you could track all the fuel purchases that you made, and it would automatically calculate your cents per mile, your cost per mile for your fuel, mm-hmm. or you can convert it to, you know, liters per 100 kilometers, whatever. It's really, really in-depth fuel tank to fuel tank management of mm-hmm. of your truck operation. And it's a great app, absolutely fabulous. But 8 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot of web technology out there. You had to do everything on your phone, and there was Apple, Android, BlackBerry, and those are the big ones. And then you had to get other ones, and all of them, whether it's Apple, Android, BlackBerry, they all had updates. Mm-hmm. At least once every 2 months, but could be as much as once a month. So I almost had to have a full-time programmer here making adjustments. So on all three of those operating systems, just to keep the thing working, you know. And that was way too much overhead. We built it for our clients to make money or to manage their stuff. But it's not like I was making any money on it. Like I was mm-hmm. making zero. It was just pure overhead. Yeah. And so we couldn't sustain it long term. So we had to shut it down. Much to the disappointment of a number of our, mm-hmm. our clients go, oh man, you know. Now that there's a web-based platform that, like our app is based out of that. Everything is off of the web. It makes administration for this way easier. Just a fraction. There, Apple and Android, there's no BlackBerry anymore, but Apple and Android still update probably once every month and a half, 2 months, and there's different levels of upgrades and stuff like that. And we do have to keep track of that. Actually, Apple does it about every 3 months.
And mine seems to do it every week.
Yeah. But, I mean, for us, we have to, you know, to keep that updated, it's not nearly the overhead it was before. We can have a side guy doing it, and they have huge programs that automatically do it, test it, everything done, and it can be done within a few hours sometimes, you know. So it's way less overhead and stuff like that on it. So things have changed so much that it's much more workable now. But I mean, we will be bringing in the Vital Travel app feature on our web thing, but we have to rewrite the whole thing because that was written in C++, and we have a completely different language for our web-based stuff, so we have to rewrite the whole thing. But we have the good format, the whole entire format with everything. I mean, it's going to be maybe a tenth of the time to rewrite it than it did to actually buy it or to build it, I mean, you know. So it's a great, but that's a project probably a year down the road. We have way too many other things coming on, but we have to be recognizing of our vulnerability to artificial intelligence hacking ourselves, hacking our phones, hacking our systems, what we do, what we don't do, that kind of thing. And there's going to be definitely war. But it's going to be AI wars. Right now, you have about a half a dozen AI guys. You got Google, Microsoft, XAI. You have there's about a half a dozen major players. At some point in time, that's the ones that we know of. There's also AI on the dark web, which. The dark web is all the stuff that's not legal, kind of a thing, and they're about 4 to 5 times larger than the real web, like stuff that we have. So they're huge, just ginormous.
You don't want to get involved in that.
No, you don't. I don't know. I know some guys who dabble in it.
That's scary stuff.
But they have their own AI, and they're doing certain stuff. And there's going to be war. There's going to be police out, and it's going to be. AI police, it's going to be AI war, it's going to be, and they're going to be tracking people down, and they're going to be tracking by people. They're going to be tracking AI down, and there's going to be all sorts of bizarre things, in my opinion, when it comes to AI. And we as humans are just going to sit here and watch what's going on. Look over there. Oh, that whole industry is just completely crashed, and that's because that AI tactic. And we're just going to watch things, and like it's some sort of a reality TV show, and see how things. And eventually, there's going to be rules associated with it, so that it'll be done. But there's going to be some sort of a crackdown on the dark web, but.
That's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
Whew.
Just massive. And
I wouldn't be able to sleep when some of the stuff that people watch or follow. My word.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Yeah. It's stealing is a real art form. You know, it's.
But you know, some of these, we heard the other day with, like sometimes you get these emails from a number you don't recognize. And I heard the other day that it's this human trafficking. They use those people to contact you to see if you're going to fall for it. Like they'll text you, or they'll they try to strike up a conversation, or they want to employ you, or like there's all kinds of things that that you get. I just delete. I don't even open them. Just delete.
That's the best thing. If you do not recognize the email, And even if you recognize, you have to double check exactly the email address.
Yeah, but it can be on Messenger. It can be on text message. Yeah. It can be an email. Yeah.
Emails, if you don't recognize it, if it's like ups.com, you know that that's not UPS.
Correct.
You know, you delete that.
Yeah.
But emails are the biggest, one of the biggest problems. But texting can take over a phone. I haven't heard very much of it, but
I get quite a bit of it.
Yeah,
so is Kathy.
Yeah. Skype, we're on Skype, and I get crap on Skype a fair bit. We are going to be moving over to an encrypted, so all the communication within our company is encrypted all the way around. Like, it's still private on Skype, but you can have people open up new conversations with new people, and you don't want that in your circle.
Oh, right, right.
And so there has to be a little bit of control. And
that's kind of like WhatsApp. You do the same thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And how many people ever thought that this much security, we're looking at security and privacy and stuff like this, how much of that actually would integrate into our lives? That, hey, wait a minute, I got to stop doing this and I got to start doing this, change doing that.
Yeah.
And it will, to some degree, it'll all come down to encrypted. We're going to get, if me and Peter want to talk, boom, boom, it's got to be encrypted. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're going to be open. Yeah. And I'm not even, maybe to some degree, the encryption may not even be safe long term. I don't know. But right now, you just sort of have to keep a little bit ahead of where the majority of the crap is
coming. It's interesting because over the years, all these conveniences have been presented to us.
Yep. Yeah.
And we just presume at no cost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there is a cost. Mm-hmm. And we're finding out that, hacking, really? What? I'm just phoning. Like, come on. Oh, no, everything costs. And you just got to...
I know a number of people that they never take their phone with them when they go away. Phone stays at home.
Yeah.
We do that a lot too.
Yeah.
Especially when during COVID. Right. Like they were tracking you. So just leave your phone at home.
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For hundreds of years they did it without a phone.
Exactly. I don't know how or why. I don't know if this is true or not, but I had a friend who, whenever he would come over, he'd throw his phone into our microwave.
Oh.
And he said, everybody put their phone in the microwave. If you want to talk to me, I'm going to throw it all in there, close the door. I don't know if that helps or not.
Well, there's
disruption.
There's pouches you can get.
Yeah. I like that. Even, you know what? Oh, no, I don't have it here. But I have you go to Canadian Tire, you get these little canisters or whatever, you put your credit cards in there.
Yeah.
Because that canister stops people from...
Correct.
Yeah.
If you wrap your phone in tinfoil, it does the same thing.
It would do that. So I'm sure that a microwave would obstruct access to it as well.
As long as nobody turns it on.
Yeah.
Then it turns things off.
Yeah, it takes things on.
Yeah, you know what? We live in such a fear-based world. It's crazy.
It can be.
You know what?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of these things are good, and good things are always abused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that there's some full-time crooks. They have crooked organizations, not the mafia type that just dealt with one or two or three issues, or they do anything and everything. Like,
And so often they use money, and people just, free money, free money.
Yeah,
there is no such a thing as free money.
You know, I had a guy come up to me, it was probably about a year and a half ago now, and he says, hey, Robert, I got a good investment for you. I said, you know what? I said, number one, does it make more than 30% a year? And he says, yes, it does. And I says, then I don't want to hear about it. What do you mean? Why? I says, because it is, number one, it's probably out of my area of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And number two is, it's going to have risk factors involved in it that I don't know about.
And you lose everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if I sign my money over to somebody else, why would I do that?
Yeah.
Like I can generally get a much better return than mutual funds on my money. Generally, I have done some stupid stuff, but I can do better than a mutual fund, but I don't want to give that control to somebody else. But that's but that's me. I'm a little bit gifted in certain areas. You know, I got some education. Yep. I got some basic understanding of some stuff. But I think the vast majority of people who, for instance, are just listening to this podcast, they have common sense. And common sense should never be overruled and should never be underestimated. Because common sense basically says, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And the only exception to that is non-taxable benefits. Because in non-taxable benefits, it even took you. How many years did from the first time you heard that about non-taxable benefits?
A long time.
Yeah, a long time. Because it's hard to fathom $12,000 a year in tax savings. You think, what's the guy doing it? You know? And but that is it. Like, it's... I the slow and steady is much more predictable, and if anything else, just pay off your house. That's your number one thing, and then after that, RRSPs, TFSAs, anything like that, then that's what it is. But realistically, it's a lot of proper investing is not difficult. It's not complicated. If you own something free and clear, if you have to borrow, then the number one thing is in Proverbs, it talks about if you find yourself surety, if you find yourself in debt, give no sleep to your eyelids, no slumber. You work your fingers to the bone and pay it off. But most people are satisfied with debt. Probably, and you guys don't watch as much movies, but do you remember Rain Man?
Yep.
You remember that movie, Rain Man?
Yeah.
With Tom Cruise?
Tom Hanks.
No, Tom Cruise. Man?
Rain Man? That was Dustin Hoffman.
But Tom Cruise was in
there. Was he in there too?
Tom Cruise, yeah. He was the brother.
Right. Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, Tom Cruise was importing 5 Lamborghini from Europe, and he was trying to get them through customs. And he had guys wanting the Lamborghini and then in the end wanting their deposit back because they don't think they're going to get their Lamborghini. And so he's negotiating this back and forth and back and forth. And he makes a deal. He says, just give me two more days and you'll have your Lamborghini. It was obvious in the movie that he didn't even know whether he can make it for 2 more days.
Right.
But he just wanted 2 more days respite. So what did the guy do when he got the 2 more days? Did he go out to customs and, okay, let's really work on this idea? No. He goes and he finds his brother and then he goes to Vegas and has a holiday.
Yeah. Well,
that's, he is in debt beyond his belief.
But he made lots of money in Vegas.
Well, yes, he did. That's sort of a spoiler on that.
Yeah.
But realistically, he trained himself not to worry when he was in debt. He says, you know what? I got 2 more days. What more do I need? Let's go have a good time.
Yeah.
Well, that's an extreme example. But people, when they think of, we want to buy a vehicle. The last, like, people automatically think, well, everybody needs a car loan. What? What do you mean? You can't buy a car without a car loan. Everybody has credit card debt. What do you mean? Everybody has credit card debt, you know, or a mortgage. You will always have a mortgage for the rest of your life. Well, but that's, you'll have a mortgage for a long time, but for certainly your goal is to get out of debt. But society, what has happened, especially during the 90s and 2000s, in that time frame, I think it was even after that, you know, it was after, up to about 2008, people would buy a house and they would pay down their mortgage until they'd have enough to be able to remortgage, to up it up, and then get a new kitchen. And that's where it used to be. It used to be kitchens cost to renovate a kitchen used to cost like, you know, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000. Now you're looking to renovate $30,000, $40,000 to renovate it, and it was three or four times the price. Why did it go up? Because nobody wanted to pay off their mortgage. They just wanted a new kitchen in there, and they say, "Oh yeah, but we're investing it in for the." Baloney.
Yeah.
You're just wanting a nicer thing, and you're and so that just elongates the mortgage way out into the future. And but that's the mindset of North America, is to be in debt, be in debt. It's amazing. Have you ever watched Everybody Loves Raymond?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the old couple, Raymond's grandparents or great grandparents,
parents. Yeah.
The house obviously has not been renovated in 30 plus years.
Right. Yeah.
She had plastic over the furniture, and those furniture is easily from the 70s, you know, 70s or early 80s. There was one episode where they had these two spoons on the wall, and they finally say, "Oh, we don't want them anymore." And they take them off. And there's this white outline, you know, because it's, and they obviously haven't painted their place or anything for 30 years. And then they put their spoons back up again, you know, but they never renovated. That mentality of not renovating their home for 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
They bought the house for whatever, $4,000 or $5,000 years ago, but they never renovated it. That's a mindset that they would be for sure baby boomers, maybe even prior to baby boomers.
Probably prior, yeah.
Where they said, look, we're going to value being out of debt, being mortgage free, and we don't have to have it. We're just being content and satisfied with what we live in, you know. But the proper or the more cultural implication is we got to renovate. We got to make this acceptable for people to come over and look and watch and listen. Well, that's
it's okay if you're going to buy something, renovate it, and then flip it to make some cash.
For sure.
But then you're doing more. You're counting the numbers right away.
Correct.
You know, a lot of people, you just tag it onto the end of your mortgage and you pay another 20 years.
Yeah.
Well, basically, all you've done is you've spent your equity that you could have had when the house was done.
Yeah.
Now, when the house is done, that equity is
gone.
Do
you know where? Do you know the wealthy barber David Chilton? He was on the Dragon's Den in Canada for years.
Okay.
As really nice guy out of Ontario. Is it Kitchener, Waterloo, London? I don't know, somewhere in there. And he had the wealthy barber. He was one of the first financial books in Canada. So this could be close 40 years ago. It'd be it was before I was married. So it would be 40 plus years ago that he wrote the book. Excellent book. I mean, even he has a newer version of it or whatever. It's all good. It is great stuff. And he has an old VHS out that I have somewhere in my whatever, and he's talking about finances, and one of the things he was talking about home ownership, and he had a friend who for I guess about 15 years or so, they'd buy a house, they would renovate it, and then they would sell it, then buy a bigger house, and then renovate it. And then buy a house bigger, renovate it bigger, and they do that. And he did whatever, 10, 12 times or something like that. The argument that this guy said to David Chilton was, well, yeah, but now I have a house free and clear of a mortgage. And the guy says, yes. And then on the chalkboard, he had the first house valued at whatever, $5,000, and then he all the way down, whatever it's 10, 12, and the two numbers. And he says, okay, now I'm going to ask you a question. He says, what is this house worth today? The first house that you were in, what is that worth?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the same.
Oh, really?
It's almost the same as the other one.
Oh, my word.
And so he did all of that work and all of that flipping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if he would have just kept that house, he'd have been better off.
Yeah.
Because he could have taken the extra money and... he could have remodeled it. He had to remodel it to make it an even playing field. And then the extra money that he had after his remodel was done, he could have invested it and he would have been way further ahead. So sometimes when people flip houses, sometimes they definitely make money. And mm-hmm. sometimes when especially you really don't know what you're doing, you make money when the market is through the roof. And, you know, you get way more than what your asking price is for. But the minute that it flattens out or it's not as aggressive anymore, all of a sudden, you easily can over-renovate and not mm-hmm. make your money. You lose very, very quickly on it. So that was a good point to have, to say. And realistically, being debt-free is what Canadians should be doing. And sometimes when we think of, you know, we look at Ottawa and we say, look how terrible they are with their finances. Well, they're blowing this and blowing that. Mm-hmm. They're just a reflection of the average people, what they think about money. And because you know that in other countries, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, I don't know, I'm pretty certain it was Norway for sure. They're not in debt. The people in Norway, the citizens are not in debt.
Really?
Very little, very, very little. And the country is just a reflection of the citizens. Wow. Because the politicians would say, hey, I could spend like crazy, but these people who are so conservative with their finances, I'd be out the next election. So I'm not going to do that. I have to be conservative. I have to reflect what the people are. And all what Ottawa is doing is just reflecting what the average citizen mm-hmm. in Canada is doing. Well, we don't care about our finances. Well, neither will we, you know, and that is same in the States. Like everybody is just a reflection of that. So I think if we want to change Canada, probably the biggest thing is we first of all get our finances in order
mm-hmm.
so that we can get our P's and Q's together. And so we can say, listen, guys, look, I think that to some degree there's more of a Canada has always been better at our finances than the United States. And even some of our debt, like for instance, our Canada Pension Plan, it's a separate entity from the cash that Canada Revenue Agency and the government actually has. It's a separate entity and it manages our CPP completely separate from the finances. In the United States, that's not so.
It's all out of
Social
one pot.
Security or whatever it is that it's all one pot, and they don't have a savings account that they're pulling out of or anything like that. So they're way worse off in the States than they are in Canada. So historically, we've always been very conservative with our money.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until probably 70s and 80s that we sort of lost our marbles. No, actually,
early
70s. It'd be 70s. And I know Pierre Trudeau was one of the first prime ministers to get significant debt into Canada. And either the people followed that or they just said, I think we can get away with it and the people will follow us.
I think mm-hmm. they made financing everything so easy.
Yeah.
You could finance everything from furniture, TV, whatever. You could just about finance your food.
Your everything.
Your like I remember years ago, wanted to see how much discipline we had, which probably was a stupid thing to do. But we went to the Brick and we bought furniture that you didn't have to pay for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Or a year, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge grab for people. Mm-hmm. And if you pay it off before the year, I think it was a year, then there's no interest.
Right, yeah.
But they thrive on people that don't pay. They charge you interest rate from the day one.
Yeah.
And so we bought furniture, and then it was like 3 or 4 days before the deadline. We went and paid it out. Oh, that lady was mad at us. Oh, she was not friendly at all. But I thought, you know, we really learned something there. And yeah. that was probably back, oh, that was probably still back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But still, we had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, no, you can, like, friends of ours are trying to sell their camper. People phone them, do you finance? No, I don't finance. I'm not a finance company. I'm just whatever. But you know what? They buy campers, and they have a 20-year mortgage on a camper.
Yeah, yeah. That's the worst industry. It's the worst industry for financing. They will grossly overfinance.
Yeah,
something
like we haul boats out of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Most of them go to the Kelowna, Vernon area, BC. These things, two boats, you got just about $1 million on your trailer. Sometimes over.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
On two boats.
Yeah.
I said, if I had $1 million, you think I would buy a boat like that? Yeah. And who's riding these boats around on the lake?
Yeah.
It's young people, young families.
Yeah.
How do you finance that?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
No. Nope.
But they got 10 years to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. There was a podcast I was watching the other day. I can't remember the guy. What do they call it? Mr. Bentley or the poor. He has one episode that's called the poorest, something like the poorest man who's ever owned a Bentley or something like that. Okay. He owns a Bentley. He's buying car salesman. Okay, he'll buy high-end vehicles and sell them and stuff like this. And his goal in life was to own a Bentley, which is probably one of the most expensive vehicles. And he finally owned one or so. And so this guy was interviewing him, who was a big real estate guy. So we had a car guy and a real estate guy. And the real estate guy says, how many guys who have these really expensive vehicles, how many are actually rich?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you mean who can actually afford it?
And, very different and question. He says,
I guess is yeah, how many can actually afford it? He says, only maybe about 25% of them. And he says,
that might be high.
No, that's what he said. He said, so the basic idea is if you see somebody with a Lamborghini, a Bentley, a very expensive, high-end vehicle, you are four times more likely to be poor. So it's just a show vehicle.
Mm.
It's not a real something. Yeah. It's just a status symbol, you know?
Yeah.
And that actually, if everybody would really embrace that, it would bring down the value of those vehicles considerably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to be associated with wealth, and realistically, it's actually the opposite now.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you own a Lamborghini, you are four times more likely not to have any available money to actually own the thing.
Yeah.
You know, fascinating.
Well, that's what I've been telling my kids last little while.
Why do they own a Lamborghini?
Not yet. No. No, but I said, you know what? What I've learned as an old man, you can actually go and buy anything you want.
Yeah.
Sure you can.
You can do anything you want.
Yep. Yeah.
The biggest problem is, can you afford to maintain it?
Yeah.
That's the long term. Like, sure.
What effect of owning that, there's a what they call acquisition cost. If you buy that, what can't you
get? Yeah, yeah.
There's a cost of that.
Yeah.
Because are you going to eat dog food now for the next 6 months?
Mac and cheese is off the list. It's dog food.
I saw a cool reel the other day. The wife is washing dishes and he's coming to the counter carrying a cup of coffee. And she says, honey, now that we're married, maybe you should sell your motorcycle so we can travel more. He said, you're starting to sound like my ex-wife. And she says, I didn't know you were married before. And he just walks away.
I wasn't.
You might be my ex-wife.
Thanks for stopping by Making Your Miles Count. For further Making Your Miles Count productions, call us at 877-987-9787 or download us at makingyourmilescount.com.